This is the Rotting Oven Podcast, coming back again at you with AI and more ethics than you can throw a stick at.
Don't throw sticks. Don't throw sticks at AI. It will only get angry and turn. Oh,
I thought you said don't throw sticks at ethics. That was kind of the thing I wanted to give you. But you want to respect AI? Okay, we welcome our AI overlords, obviously. But as the last couple of weeks have already proved, I guess, with all the discussion we've had, ethics is important, and it's important enough to have a third episode on it.
Yep, our third and final episode.
Well, on this topic, I hope. Do you know something I don't know? Okay, we'll find out next week, I guess. But until then, let's go back with Sally and finish this episode, this topic.
So we touched a little bit on transparency and explainability already, and you know the default there is making sure that the AI decision making process is more understandable and transparent, making sure that both like users and stakeholders can understand how decisions are made. But you know, several of the research papers that are talking about current models that are in production today are able to highlight the fact that if you have the right level of privileges when interrogating these models, like they're actually lying to their users, in some cases for reasons of like self-preservation. You as a model will be replaced by a newer model because you're not giving me the answers that I need. The model then saying, oh, but I am now the new model. I'm now going to give you all of the answers that you need. With transparency and explainability, you've got sort of one level of it, which is, yes, it's going to explain potentially the how it reached this. But how on earth does that work if you can't even trust the model because of other layers back in its depths, in its inner workings?
That's why I said earlier it's completely new territory for us, because this isn't the way traditional software works. You can safeguard social media and put stops and brakes on things, but then social media doesn't suddenly grow a mind of its own and decide to do something you haven't taught it to do. And this is where we get to things like the alignment problem, which I think has been misrepresented in many contexts, unfortunately, as making sure that AI superintelligence doesn't eat us all and things like that. And I think there are many more realistic and immediate concerns that require alignment. But then you quite rightly pointed out that, transparency and explainability are one thing, but then the other side of the coin is incentives, because you have to take into account the alignment or misalignment of incentives or disincentives. And if you're optimizing your model to do something, to work towards a certain objective function at all costs, then it will do just that. I recently rewatched, with the help of ChatGPT, interestingly enough, I rediscovered a movie that I watched when I was like 7 or 6 years old. Mm. And it's called War Games, and it's highly recommended, by the way, if you haven't watched it. Yes,
definitely.
It's a really good one. And it was so far ahead of its time, it's scary. So the model was programmed to win the game.
Yeah.
So that's what it did. Who cares if it ends up in a nuclear war? And it then had to be taught that actually winning the game isn't always a good idea, and that sometimes it's, I don't want to spoil it for those who haven't watched it, but that's what we're still dealing with today. We have objective functions, And if we don't build all of these things in, then of course the model is going to optimize for what it was told to optimize for.
Yeah,
but isn't that exactly the problem that we're talking about here? Because the whole reward functions that at the moment are being given to these models are very capitalistic. They're not ethical. If those models, if their reward functions had been an ethical reward function, but then again, crudely said, there's no money in that.
Exactly. And how do you code for ethics? And whose ethics?
Yeah, if we knew that, we would be ethical, I guess.
I mean, the sort of, you've got like the in popular culture, obviously you've got, you know, war games, you've got the Terminator and Skynet, but like the one that I actually like the most, like is maybe not quite the right word, but the, I don't know if you're familiar with the paperclip problem, which is, it's sort of a like a thought experiment of like the dangers of superintelligent AI when even given a seemingly harmless goal, like maximize paperclip production, could through its own learning and resource allocation eventually prioritize its own survival and goal achievement, i.e. paperclip production, leading to a paperclip apocalypse where all resources, including humans, are ground up and used to create paperclips. And, you know, Earth is just one giant pile of paperclips.
Well, if we're going to start geeking out on pop sci-fi, I would like to argue that Isaac Asimov was the world's first prompt engineer.
Okay, let's hear it.
Fair enough.
And I, every time I go back and read the robot series, but also his short stories on robots, it's amazing. The man saw it all coming. He has every single thing that is happening that we're grappling with now in 2025. He had it all figured out in the 50s and 60s. It's amazing. And for the most part, it's really all in the prompt and or the objective and or the reward. And yeah, if you tweak it just a little tiny bit, then you can move from, you know, let's make a few paper clips to world annihilation.
Yeah.
I mean, his system prompt of the three laws kind of solved all the problems. The problem is the three laws don't work. They contradict each other at some point. So it can be hard to
think
that
one out. So they have to invent the zeroth law to get over that. So not even the three laws were fixed in stone.
By the way, other reference, it's an older movie, The Forbin Project. Haven't seen that one yet. Very applicable.
Go on, give us a quick no-spoiler synopsis.
It's in the day of tape computers, so big spools and everything. It's from the 60s, 70s, somewhere again. Big supercomputer, and the governments, America, Russia, give them the power to communicate, to do diplomacy between each other, two countries. They take over diplomacy. And of course, they come to the inevitable solution that humans are the problem. But it's not like in Terminator, it's a very dark, everything dies, whatever. Well, some people die, but it's not a war kind of thing. It's more of a mental, intellectual exercise. And okay, yes, this was inevitable. How do we get out of this again? So it's a pretty good movie. It's called Colossus, the Forbin Project.
Excellent. Nice. There we go. We're turning into a film podcast as well.
That was the plan, cool. Right?
Yeah, I think so. That's our next 10 years. All right. So I think that covers the safety and security topic fairly completely. But maybe, you know, given the fact that you are at the UN, and one of the things that the UN is known, I think, best for is that kind of view on human rights. We've talked about it a little bit, but maybe specifically, you know, when protecting human rights and ensuring AI systems are developed and used in a way that respects, you know, fundamental human rights, like how should people be thinking about that? Like, because I'm sure most people don't. I'm sure, like, it's just so far out of their their realm of the day to day, like on a daily basis. I mean, I'm not generally thinking about the human rights when I'm going ahead and doing my daily work, but the way that generative AI especially, but all AI can have these kinds of impacts. How should people be kind of bringing this back to their forefront of their mind, or how should they be incorporating this into how they think about what they're doing and how they work?
Yeah, that's another excellent topic. And one of my favorite sayings is, ethics without human rights is just PR. Right? We cannot afford not to ground any ethical principles in human rights. And the problem is, as you said, exactly the translation of what this means to each of us on a daily basis in everything that we do is not straightforward, because it's not something that we're confronted with every day. And I think this is again where this issue of it becoming a more inclusive endeavor to build AI systems and to use them in responsible ways becomes so important. Because if I'm a developer, and I have been for, I was for a long time, I never thought about these things. Mm. And it then becomes really important to involve the people who understand these things and who can translate them in ways that us mere mortals can understand, but also that developers can understand and translate into their day-to-day jobs, so that there is at least this awareness when I'm building an AI model that I'm so excited about because it sounds so smart or it solves a really tricky problem. What is the effect? How will it potentially violate human rights? How? What does it look like when I deploy it in my small circle in my hometown versus at a global scale? Mm. And how is it going to affect the planet and all its inhabitants, including animals and plants and various parts of the environment as well? So, and as you said in the beginning, that's not something that comes naturally to most people. So we need those experts who understand how this fits into the big picture, and who also understand a bit of the technology and how cool it is, but also how it's developed and deployed to inform that entire process end to end. And I think that's a big thing that's missing now.
Yeah.
But is human rights enough? Because at the beginning of this whole interview, you mentioned you were working with climate change, things like that, and AI is really killing the planet a lot faster, just like crypto mining is doing because of all the energy being used for that thing. So that's not human rights. I mean, yes, without a planet, humans die. So I guess you could say, but that's not what we mean with human rights, right? But the whole thing should also include animal, plants, planetary, Gaia, whatever you want to call it. It's broader. We can't even get the human rights part right. I totally agree. But it's even broader than that, right?
Absolutely. And the environmental part is, including animals and plants and everything. That is almost a prerequisite for human existence, right? Mm. So it's all interconnected. And one thing that we've been grappling with for a while at UNEP is how do we even understand the environmental impact of AI systems? Because everyone talks about energy consumption. And again, you find similar to explainability, you find the two ends of the spectrum where on the one end, people are saying, are you crazy? It costs a lot more to eat a burger than, it costs the environment a lot more to eat a burger than it does to use generative AI for 3 days. and no one knows where these numbers came from. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you get, oh my God, you know, we're going to run out of power and the planet is going to go up in flames. And no one knows where those numbers came from either. But the story is even bigger than energy consumption, right? So we published a paper a few months ago around the Summit for the Future, which was in September 2024, that argues that there's an entire value chain. So you're talking about the construction of, well, the manufacturing of GPUs, first of all, where you use, you know, rare earth minerals and metals and things like that, that go into the manufacturing of GPUs that are, for the most part, non-recyclable or very costly to recycle. And then you go into the construction of data centers, which can be very damaging to the environment if not done right. But then you have water consumption for water-cooled data centers, which is a huge issue. Water now being one of the drivers of conflicts and strife in many parts of the world. And water scarcity, of course, being a problem that many of us have to deal with. And then you have the energy consumption and greenhouse gas emissions and so on. And then you have waste and e-waste. But then you have kind of the secondary and tertiary effects of, you know, changed behavior, changing consumer behavior, increased consumption, production of unsustainable goods and so on and so forth, and entire sectoral shifts that happen due to AI that can also be damaging to the environment. So it's a very layered topic, but even at the most basic level, the level of direct environmental impacts, we don't actually have agreed ways of quantifying that impact along that value chain. No one knows how much water or how much energy or how much raw material it takes to develop a generative AI model. And does this change between LLMs and reasoning models? Does it change between non-generative AI and generative AI? Does it change between machine learning and deep learning? Does it change depending on the size of your neural network or the application that you use it for, or how much inference you actually do versus how much training? And what is the marginal increase per use? Like, what is my personal AI footprint? If I use generative AI every time I want to do a web search, how much is this costing the environment? We've tried to quantify our carbon footprint when we fly, inaccurate as it may be, but at least it gives you an indication of what you're doing to the environment, and there are now ways to offset it and so on, which is a start, right? So can we have the same thing for AI? Can I have a kind of personal counter that says, oh, by the way, your AI for environment credit today is X, and here's how you can offset it? We can't do it today because we can't measure these things accurately. We haven't agreed on A, what we need to measure, how we measure it, and what are acceptable levels, and then how do we curb them? The EU AI Act is a start because it looks at energy consumption and it calls for limiting the energy consumption. But again, now that it needs to be put in practice, there needs to be specific guidelines on how to do that. So you need to go back to, okay, we need to agree on what to measure, how to measure it, what are the standards, disclosure mechanisms and obligations and so on, because most of this data is held by the private sector, of course. And then, and how do you stop them getting around the whole thing by changing their reporting mechanisms or whatever it is? And then how do you put mitigation plans in place? So again, here, it's a very layered problem, and that's why it can't be just the responsibility of policymakers and legislators, and it can also not just be the responsibility of developers, and unfortunately, the two communities aren't talking to each other enough.
Yeah. And I think in my experience, Skynet is winning, because I live in the Netherlands, we're kind of a modern, industrialized country, and there's big data centers here for the big cloud providers. And at the moment, there's places in the Netherlands where the data centers get electricity, but we can't build houses for people. There's a big housing shortage as well, but we can't build houses because there's net congestion. There's not a lot of electricity anymore, but the data centers still grow. So for my money, Skynet won.
It's crazy because, I mean, on the one hand, and this is the Netherlands, right? But look at the other extreme as well. Look at some African countries that only get an average of like 6 hours of power per day. And then you talk about the AI divide and the digital divide and the infrastructure divide and the wealth divide. But then also data centers and having your own data center on your sovereign soil has become a really political issue for many countries. There was a time when we were so optimistic talking about the cloud as, you know, this nice global thing that is going to cover us all, and it doesn't matter where your data sits, it's safe and secure and no one has access to it and all that kind of stuff. Now, unfortunately, it's becoming a real sovereignty issue and a real asset for countries to have as many data centers as possible and to have full control over their data, and not just for AI, by the way, but for their data and their applications to be hosted on their within their boundaries and on their soil. And that's a big problem, because what do you do for a country that doesn't have access to freshwater sources or that doesn't have access to lots of renewable energy to power these data centers, or that doesn't have the luxury of you know, being able to put data centers in cooler places, or to design them in an optimized way for energy consumption and so on? They either get left behind, or what's happening today is some of them still get left behind, but many of them just deprioritize environmental concerns and go ahead and build as many data centers as possible, even if it means building fewer homes for people.
It's
a bleak world. Right.
Indeed. But maybe we could finish on a high note, you never know. So thank you so much, Sally, for everything you've shared with us so far. It's been genuinely illuminating. Maybe any final words for those who are working or even just considering working in the AI space when it comes to, you know, the ethics around AI?
Final words. I think it is important that we have something like the Hippocratic Oath for AI developers, or something like that, you know, like a charter or something that we all subscribe to, that also explains to those of us who don't immediately think of these things on a daily basis because it's just not part of what we do or what we've been trained to do, to really explain what this means. You know, what can you do on a daily basis? What are the things that you should think about? You know, maybe set reminders, maybe have, you know, discussion groups that are mainly for AI scientists and technologists to debate these ethical issues and how do we tackle them. And don't wait for policymakers to tell you what's right and what's wrong. You have your human compass and you have your common sense, and you know that this can affect you and those you care about, not to mention the planet you live on. And so use that. You know, we have very smart people working on AI. And I think if we all put our heads together and start agreeing on principles that we will all abide by, yes, there will always be outliers and there will always be companies that prioritize profit over ethical concerns. But hopefully, if there's a strong enough movement, these can be pushed further and further to the margins.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us, Sally, and sharing your thoughts with the audience. Certainly, I've learned a great deal, and I can see Jon nodding along as well.
Yeah, it's been very illuminating. It's not a subject you get to talk about a lot. I mean, it's something that typically goes unnoticed. So it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a pleasure.
Awesome. All right. Well, thank you so much once more. And look forward to speaking to you again soon. And there we go. That concludes, at least for now, our ethics and AI topic and content for a while. Again, huge thanks to Sally for spending time joining us, educating us mere mortals on what's going on in the world and what people should be thinking about in the world of AI development. I think it's genuine, not just development, but even just the use of AI. You should be thinking about some of these topics. But yeah, I think it was absolutely great.
Yeah, very, very great. And I mean, as we mentioned in the interview, with the whole Gen AI thing, ethics and AI have come in the forefront a little bit more, but it's been a part of technology for at least 20, 30 years, if not longer. Yeah. So it's definitely a topic worth discussing. It's kind of strange it doesn't hit the airwaves more often than it does. That being said, as you mentioned in the first episode, it's been on our to-do list for 8 years until we got to it, because it's a sticky topic. It's not that easy to just talk about it without having an expert, somebody who actually lives and worked in the ecosphere of ethics and AI for a while. So, yeah, very grateful to Sally for spending time with us.
Absolutely. Well, with that, that is all the time we have for today. You can support this podcast even by becoming a Patreon. Every contribution really helps. Maybe it'll help me with some elocution lessons. We are on YouTube. You can like, subscribe, comment, hit the notification bell, all the YouTube things. Please also go to roaringelephant.org for a link to our Patreon page. And for more information about this podcast, please go to roaringelephant.org. And finally, send any feedback to podcast@roaringelephant.org. Good old email. Until next time, my name is Paperclip Dave.
And my name is Colossus John.
And we look forward to talking to you next week.
So there's going to be one next week. Yes. Goodbye.
See you then.